the foreigners who were asking to see Jesus when it was super cool to hang out with Jesus. They were masking their glory chasing by pretending that it was all about God. It was all about Jesus. I kept thinking about all the ways I still do this. We say we're looking for Jesus when we're really looking for glory. And to be clear, glory as we understand it, Palm Sunday glory, not Easter glory. The title, as you can see, of my sermon this week is Glory, Glory. So I've obviously had this word glory on my mind a lot this week. In this short set of verses from John's 12th chapter, the word glory or glorified or some version of it appears more than a few times, so it's kind of hard to ignore. Oxford Dictionary says this word means high renown or honor won by notable achievements. Webster says it means praise, honor, or distinction extended by common consent. I like that one. But maybe for you, like me, the official definition, the Webster Oxford version, is not what comes to mind when you think of the word glory. I personally think of the Christmas story first. The glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. I picture rays of light streaming from somewhere, the sky, a person, a trophy, you know, something. Maybe you don't think of a churchy story when you hear the word glory. Maybe you think of crowns or thrones. Maybe you think of trophies or awards. Those all make sense when we think of how we use this word in our everyday vernacular. Just a few glory days, right? The glory days. Everybody knows what that means when you say it. They ended in a blaze of glory. This is my crowning glory. No guts, no glory. We use this pretty regularly. We even use it as an exclamation of delight. Well, glory be, which I don't know why I only hear it in the same voice that says, bless your heart. Like Blanche Devereaux from Golden Girls, like that's the voice I hear in my head. Well, glory be, I just hear it like that. But that is how it comes to mind. All of these things imply a kind of pinnacle. The highest of highs, the best of the best. Even that phrase, going out in a blaze of glory, implies a spectacular or exceptional finale of some kind. It is a word rooted for us in power and prestige and success. Glory. All the talk in today's gospel story of glory stems from this strange interaction with Jesus and the disciples that starts with Philip and some Greeks, which, to be clear, John uses to mean foreigners. They have come to Jerusalem for the Passover celebration. We don't know if they're there to participate in it or to witness it. It is quite a spectacle in Jesus' time. It's not clear. But they let Philip know they are there to see Jesus. It's a big deal. These foreigners have heard about this guy and they want to see him. And it's important to know at this moment, the response of the disciples is likely, buddy, get in line. In the church today, we're on the cusp of the story of the triumphal entry that we'll celebrate next week on Palm Sunday. But in John's gospel, in the story in front of us today, this triumphant entry has just taken place. This is the very next story in John's gospel. So this we want to see Jesus moment is the first thing that happens after the big parade wraps up. You want to see Jesus, the most popular guy in Jerusalem? Yeah, you and everybody else. Take a number. It makes sense. Jesus is as big of a deal as he is going to get. And these guys want in on the glory. So Philip and Andrew bring this request to Jesus, and Jesus says, the time has come for me to be glorified. And while that's kind of confusing to us, I imagine the disciples are like, yes, glory, it's about time. This thing they've been waiting for and hearing Jesus hint at for months and weeks is finally here. Let's go. but it's not quite what they think it is. It's not what we think of either, honestly, if we use our earlier list of idioms and our own use of the word glory. But no worries, Jesus clears that up quick enough. Very truly, I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls to the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Those who love their life lose it. Those who hate their life will keep it. I kind of imagine the disciples here thinking to themselves, for once, just one time, it would be so awesome if Jesus answered the question that they asked. Just outright, can you give me a yes or a no, please, Jesus? Imagine if they were like, Jesus, some people want to meet you, and instead of this phrase about seeds and clinging to your life, Jesus says, you know what? Thank you so much. But we're going to have a small dinner with just 13 of us, and then we're going to have a quiet evening together before all hell breaks loose. And they're like, what? And Jesus says, what? And that's what happens here. But that is not what he says. He says, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies. And these words, though maybe not quite the answer the disciples were hoping for, give us a lot. They say a lot. Because if we take them in the context of glory, of popularity, the popularity of Jesus and people wanting to see him and the disciples thinking that glory, glory is headed their way, it's like Jesus is trying to give them a way to look at what's coming that might not wreck them quite so much. Jesus is trying to bring the distance between their expectations and the reality of what's next just a little closer together. This is yet another way Jesus is telling them things are going to get bad. But that bad thing is not the end. Death is not the end. And of course, they do not hear this for what it is. Who would, truly? Anyone who has come into contact with death, anyway, with any loved one, knows that it for sure feels like the absolute end. When you're standing in the rubble of what used to be, it really feels like the end of all things. Jesus is talking about himself here, the very near reality of his own death. And he knows the disciples cannot imagine a reality, a scenario, where the crowd will turn so quickly from what they've just experienced on that Palm Sunday road to a cross on Golgotha. They cannot imagine it. He wants them to know it will absolutely feel like the end. They will absolutely be wrecked by it, just like we are all wrecked by the death of someone we love. But Jesus is here to change what glory means. They think it means Palm Sunday. Jesus knows it means Easter. But there is a vast distance between the two. All this talk of glory, and Jesus talks about wheat. He makes this thing the disciples have very little frame of reference for, and he tries to simplify it. What a hard, brave, and beautiful word Jesus gives his disciples and us here. You cannot grow something you don't plant. And when you plant it, it sure feels like a kind of death. But when you hold on to that seed and you don't let it go, it will not result in anything more than what you are holding. There will not be loss if you hold on to it, so I get why holding it feels easier and right and safer, but there won't be growth either when you hold a seed in your hand and cannot let it go. Jesus says a thing that seems so simple. You cannot plant something when you hold it in your hand. And it will look like death to let it go. But new life will follow death. All this week, I kept thinking of those Greeks the foreigners who were asking to see Jesus when it was super cool to hang out with Jesus. They were masking their glory chasing by pretending that it was all about God. It was all about Jesus. I kept thinking about all the ways I still do this. We say we're looking for Jesus when we're really looking for glory. And to be clear, glory as we understand it, Palm Sunday glory, not Easter glory, that requires a lot of death first. Because if we meant it when we say, if I meant it when I say I'm looking for Jesus, we would do a lot more planting of seeds. And sometimes planting looks a lot more like a burial than like gardening. This is an uncomfortable truth for me. What if we are the ones in this story holding on to a thing that was always meant to die? Those who love their life will lose it, or another way to translate this verse may be better, those who cling to their life will lose it. Holding on to the glory might actually be what's killing us. Chasing Palm Sunday glory might actually be what's holding us back from Easter glory. What might it look like to let go of what was? To unclench our hand that is holding the seed of what's next? What might it look like to bury it and see what grows? It is so scary to let go of what we know, of who we used to be, of how we used to define ourselves. Prince of Peace used to look like this. Christianity used to look like this. I used to look like this. I can't be anything else because this is who I've always been. What would it look like to bury that, to let it die, and see what grows? It is so scary to stand in a field of planted seeds and not know what's going to happen next. It is scary, but that is not where the story ends. My favorite author and theologian, Barbara Brown Taylor, once said, "Whether it is a seed in the ground, a baby in the womb, or Jesus in the tomb, new life begins in the dark." Life begins in the dark, but it does not stay there. In this story, in the story that we profess our faith in, it does not stay there. We need not be afraid of death and burial, darkness, or loss. They are real. They are so hard. They are so hard. They wreck us. Letting it go, burying it, wrecks us. But that is not the end. Life begins in the dark, and light always, always breaks in. And glory be. Amen. All right, so we have been fed and now we are sent. And I just wanna, I've seen some green. I saw a teddy bear that had shamrocks on it. I am 0% Irish, so this is not a feast day for me, but I know it's a big deal for some families. So I wanted to close with the breastplate of St. Patrick prayer. It's very long, we're not gonna do the whole thing, but I'm gonna do part of it because this is part of our history, part of our faith is this Trinitarian theology, this idea that God is three and one, the magnet that holds us, that is where they're all together. That was such a perfect answer, Gavin. Thank you. A good reminder that three in one is hard for us to understand. St. Patrick gave us a new way to understand it, brought that theology to the world. And so we are thankful for him for that. And he had this beautiful prayer. You can look it up online. Just search St. Patrick's Prayer. You'll find it. But it talks about the way we go into the world. So I think it is a perfect way to end. So here we go. I arise today through a mighty strength, the invocation of the Trinity, through belief in the threeness, through confession of the oneness of the Creator of creation. Christ with me, Christ before me, Christ behind me, Christ in me. Christ beneath me, Christ above me, Christ on my right, Christ on my left. Christ when I lie down, Christ when I sit down, Christ when I arise. Christ in the heart of everyone who thinks of me, Christ in the mouth of everyone who speaks of me, Christ in every eye that sees me, Christ in every ear that hears me. I arise today through a mighty strength, the invocation of the Trinity, through belief in the threeness, through confession of the oneness of the Creator of creation. May you go with Christ in peace to love and serve the Lord. Thanks be to God.